Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Tripper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is manager of Comics Dungeon, Chris Casso.
Hello.
Manager of Corner Comics in Kirkland, Washington, Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Manager of his own destiny, Cole Hornaday.
Loser baby.
I just felt, you know, every once in a while we might get a new listener who pops in the middle of our run, doesn't actually listen to the first episodes where we talk about who we are. So, yeah.
Well, let's hope we didn't scare them all away, Ben.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Too late now.
Hope they make it past the musical intro. How is everybody doing this fine evening?
He's all right.
Yes.
He's doing okay.
Half awake or half asleep. I can't decide.
Dream state.
Yes.
Unknown cadaver.
Twilight.
Everything's
well, you got more answers than you needed.
I was looking through the headlines of the old comic book Rolodex on the internet that everybody has access to, and I saw this one headline where Eric Stevenson, the publisher of Image Comics, says there are too many GD books out there. They're flooding the market. He says Image 2 is guilty of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question to you, everybody, to you all as managers of retail stores, and to you, Cole, as a consumer of comics, are there too many comics?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, is there a like, what does that mean?
It means many things. I mean, one problem is I don't have space for them all.
Yep.
Another problem is too many come out too fast. Nobody has enough time to catch everything.
Yep.
So good things get thrown under the bus while we're drowning under certain events by certain publishers. And yeah, it just means that nobody's got the time or the money, and you're losing a lot of opportunities. And a lot of creators might be putting out gold, the best work of their career, and no one will have noticed that it has happened.
And that's what I'm always terrified of. I think I buy more independent. Chris, you can tell me. I have tried so hard to stay away from the big two anymore because I find their work to be so repetitive, but I don't think I've succumbed to an event solely because of financial reasons, but also for space. Mm-hmm. Since I think the last one was the
Hoxpox?
Well, that one wasn't so much, no, but I mean multi-crossover.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I think it was the Hydra Captain America.
You didn't go in on all that, though.
But I got the whole
the main thing.
Core series.
Yeah.
But even then, I usually don't commit to that much. I mean, Hoxpox, we knew it was going to be six.
Yeah.
And I could decide at the end of that six, but like the Captain America one, that was 10, 12
it
books,
went for a bit.
Right?
Yeah. It went too long.
And it was like, I see where this is going. I can predict the ending because I've been participated in this formula for a greater part of my collecting career and I'm done.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, my biggest fear is like, you know, I will miss something that's really, really golden.
Yeah.
And
I miss things. I mean, I look at the catalogs. I was looking through Instagram and Nicole posted some pictures of a book and I'm like, wait.
What's that?
And then I looked it up and I was like, wait, I completely overlooked it. So,
it's easy. I mean, at this point, you and I are barely alive and we're getting previews done, you know, and we're flipping through that catalog at lightning speed and we're like, we're done.
Yep. And I rely on Chris to point out new independent material. Like we did our best of, and I was mentally spooling through my Rolodex of my best of the year and best of the decade, and recognizing that a lot of these independent books, like let's say These Savage Shores, were books that Chris had pointed out to me that I would have missed entirely and probably been really sad to discover a year or two later when the value of them is shot up.
Well, so there was so many end of year lists and I saw a book that I was just like, what are you? Where did you come from? And I found it was from a publisher that doesn't go through normal distribution, and I reached out and I'm probably not going to be able to order from them because they don't have the best deals. So it's like, there's just going to be certain things that are inaccessible. Mm-hmm. I found a book that's a UK book through a Kickstarter. It's like, nobody in this area is ever going to read that book. So there will always be those things left behind, mm-hmm. no matter what. but it's worse when there's too much stuff, period. Yep. There's a period of Images publishing that one of our customers defines as the sad spaceman era. And it's just where every other sci-fi book featured an astronaut that looked like he was half dead on the cover. And when you have all of that coming out, there was another sci-fi book that wasn't about a sad spaceman that you would have ignored because you were tired of things that look like space books from Image. So, yeah, they're guilty.
And they even said that they did too much sci-fi and they needed to diversify. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're cutting down. I think they had a formula where they're going to trim back over a certain percentage over time. But the other publishers ain't going to follow that format because it's all for nothing, you know? Got to get your books out. Plus, we have new publishers. We have new creators. And they're like, I created a whole other new superhero universe. It's like, oh,
good luck with
one
that.
Of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's and we've talked about on the podcast before the frustration that artists have talked about on their own social media platforms of how they're like, why my book no do thing, and I think it's even harder now, and even the hand selling or the trying to like send emails out or trying to send press things out or PDFs or whatever, all that you're doing all the things that you can do, but we're bombarded. You know, it's like I find that I want to give people the time of day and I just don't have the time of day. You know, and it's just if you don't immediately grab me or if I, you know, like there's a new thing coming out from Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson and I love them. They did the Dregs. They did Black Stars Above. Well, not Zach, but Lonnie. And then they're doing a new thing. So I'm like, I will pay attention to you because I know you. You have something, you know, so it's like, unfortunately, a lot of stuff's going to take the back seat because
our own personal biases,
our own things of like, you know what, I could actually hand sell this. This actually has a place in my store and I already know it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what it comes down to.
Has this happened before? Are we just in a wave of just a glut of books in the market and eventually it'll self-correct or maybe books that don't sell will die off? Do you see this kind of like ebbing and flowing?
Yes, but it feels like it's been one continually growing flow tsunami for a couple years now.
Oh, really?
And the ebbs have been minimal compared to the flow. And the scary thing is that the idea of it course correcting itself probably won't happen unless like a good chunk of the industry just crashes. So, you know.
Well, no one wants that.
No one wants that. Completely, yeah.
Completely.
but yeah, so it's kind of tough to tell. Like, I think a lot of publishers are just, like, Image is going to make those moves because I think they looked at the numbers and they're willing to figure it out. Marvel ain't willing to figure that out. Marvel's never willing to figure out if they should make things returnable. They just said, nah, we don't want to. It's too much work. It is a lot of work. But, yeah, a lot of the other publishers, they're not going to take the time to crunch the data and see what's going on. So,
and we have, I've seen two new publishers popping up. I mean, I'm sure there's more, but there's two that have substantial space in the previews that are popping up and trying to get people like the Garth Ennis's and the other humans I can't remember right now. And they're, you know, there's a lot of people who, they're like, we're doing the thing and it's going to be great. And they're all speaking in hyperbole and saying the same things we've heard over and over and over again. And I say, I wish you the best. Yeah. I absolutely do. Because I clearly you're passionate about this and you're trying to do the things. But I just don't know how much that this industry is willing to support those endeavors. You know,
one good, real good, quick example is the TKO publisher that we talked about.
Yeah.
They came out pretty strong at the end of 2018, I think they released all their books Netflix style in December 2018. And we're like, yeah, this is good, strong. I got a lot of people interested. Your social media game is pretty up there. You got good talents. You have new talents. You're pushing it through. Next wave of books didn't come out until October this last year, like maybe even later.
I think even later.
Almost maybe. A full year. Yeah. And like the one book by Jeff Lemire had a little bit of momentum.
Yeah.
It's already gone.
Sentient. Yeah.
It's already gone though. And so like nobody's talking about it on this front. Nobody seems to really care anymore because so many other publishers have arrived within that 1 year period of them taking too long. Their candy is gone.
Yeah.
Was that not part of their strategy, was to do this annual wave, or were
they never said they never gave a date. They just said Netflix style, and the smart thing would have been quarterly, two books quarterly, maybe three. But instead, they did four books, and then a full year later, another four books, and it's just like,
Yeah. And I found that out of the four books, I could sell one of the books. For every four that they did, I could do one. I could sell The Garth Ennis Sarah. I could sell Sentient by Jeff Lemire. And that was it. Then they would just sit on my shelf. And, you know, that's what I feel like with these other ones. AWA is one of them. And the other one I think is called Clover. Those are the two publishers that I'm seeing. I think it's AWA that's got like Frank Cho. And there's a Straczynski one with, Diodato. You know, so the Resistance, that's probably going to be their title, their flagship thing. People are kind of talking about it, but again, it's like you get that flash in the pan, you get that thing, but can you keep the momentum? You know, that's what a lot of publishers are finding. I mean, there was even a merging between Oni and Lion Forge and some drama around that as well, but like, you know, because we have to like become amoebas and like just start assimilating each other and stuff in order to survive.
It all comes
back. Lovecraft comes back again. Yeah, it's a tough industry, and so I'm glad that Image is at least seeing that and trying to course correct a bit. But
yeah,
I don't know. The best thing I can say is go through your previews catalog, and if you care, you know, this is the time to pre-order. Not necessarily to keep things alive, because I don't know that we can do that anymore, but just to get your thing that you want, just to get a thing that you might care about, because I don't have the shelf space to do. I've had to pull back a lot.
Shelf space an issue, and this is like across the industry, because we've spoken to a lot of other retailers. We're all tightening the belt. Because especially with the economy the way it is, with politics the way they are, with the industry being the way it is, like, we gotta be safe, we gotta pull back. So I'm telling customers, you know, if it's something that's, you know, a little bit more oddball that I got no info on, you need to let me know you want it. And then if I don't have it right now, I can reorder it. And every customer's like, oh, no, you don't have to do that. It's just like, so you didn't want it.
Yeah, you just want to look at it on the shelf.
You just wanted to peruse it.
Which I can understand. As a customer, I there's things that I don't want to commit to that I just want to look at. But I'm like, I can't justify shelf space just because I want to look at a thing.
Right.
You know?
A quick numbers game, and I'll be done, is so every week on average for our new release wall, we have, let's just say, four long boxes show up. And that's a long box can hold about 300 comics. Do 300 times $4 each, you know, just looking at retail. By the end of the 1 week cycle, almost one and a half box comes back off, maybe more. That's a lot of unsold material. And the window that we perceive for best sales is only within the 1 week. So, you know, you look at, that's about 450 books at $4 each. Do the math. We can't afford to have that much that just doesn't sell through.
Yeah.
So, we trim the belt, we cut or tighten the belt little bit by bit, you know, just to see if we can, you know, spread that money elsewhere. More kids books, more Funko, I don't know, something, you know.
I was going to say more queer books for Chris, but
Yeah, more queer books for me, yes. Coming up next on Review. But, so that's, you know, we're thinking about trimming back, so that just, it's survival tactic, you know.
Crazy. Would it be, like, I know we're not, you know, there's no point in, like, talking about hypotheticals, but imagine if instead of there's a glut of books, there's just not much, right? Is that, like, what's the lesser of two evils in these two scenarios? Because there's never going to be an ideal world.
Right. The
I feel like we saw that kind of when like New 52 rolled out, right? Because it was like a lot of abandoned ship.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of abandoned ship.
And that was where Image rose to the occasion.
Yeah. I'd say just if we can have less, but the quality was higher on each one, the attempted quality. Because there's a lot of the stuff in the mainstream where they're throwing out so many things and you can't expect, sorry, Atlantis Attacks to be good. So it's just like, you shouldn't have even bothered. Sorry, guys. Things like that. And I know it's a tough call. It's subjective. But if we just had more quality, we'd have more regularity in our customer base. When Saga was coming out on its regular schedule, that was consistent money. It goes on hiatus for a year and a half, and it's the image is in shambles for us.
Yeah.
So that's the consistency is the most important thing, and less quantity with consistency would be the ideal for me.
And to add on to that, for me, there's like a timeline factor. Like if comics could breathe a little longer, instead of this monthly cycle of we need a new issue every month, mm-hmm. It would first give us more shelf space and give people more time for consistency, like especially at Marvel and DC when we keep seeing all these fill-in artists and things. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're good, people will wait for you. The Saga method of being every other month, like people will come in for you.
Bi-monthly.
But what I hear you saying is that we'll wait, but not too long.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't pull a doomsday clock of we're bi-monthly, then we're quarterly, then we're whenever it happens.
But
you know?
When I was younger, it was like there were the monthlies, then there were the bi-monthlies, and then there were the quarterlies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, of course, the market was smaller, but, you know, it was kind of up to you. It was your responsibility as a reader to know, you know, what was every other month, what was not. And it was kind of a shock to the system, shock to the financial system when everything went monthly or, God forbid, weekly in the summers.
Yes. Yeah, it's too much.
Weeklies are
that was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I still want monthlies. I think Batman could be monthly. Your flagships need to be monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And the smart thing, though, is if you don't have an artist that can do monthly, do those smart stories like when Greg Rucka was doing Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
and every other issue was one artist, the other issue, so you have two consistent artists.
Oh, gotcha.
You set up a team, and so that you're used to the visual style of two people.
Yes.
And you just don't throw in random fillers, you know, because I think a lot of the Tom King run jumbled between two to three regular guys.
Yeah.
Tom King's going to be doing Strange Adventures, and he has two artists on that, and that's how he can keep it going. Otherwise, you have something like Tom King's Bat-Cat coming out, mm-hmm. and he wanted one artist, and that book is 7 months late for release.
Yes.
So you don't want that. So exactly what Cole said, fall back, have your monthlies, have your bi-monthlies, have your quarterlies.
Yeah.
And then train your audience to expect when those are coming.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think flagships for sure, because everyone's going to pick up Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, you know, there's something where I can't think of a title right now, but something that would come out, then it would be on my FOC, and I would say nobody cared, trim it back. Everybody's now read the title and now cares.
Yes.
And so number two, I'm done. So if I got a little extra breath, a couple weeks even if it was a month and a half, it would actually give me enough time to properly order to then properly supply for my consumers when they've been able to have a chance to read their stack.
Mm-hmm.
It happens too fast, and that's why number twos are always the thing that sells out, because we're like, nope. We trim the fat. And then we realize that we're a skeleton, and we're dead. So I that room would also just help from a retailer aspect and a consumer base, because they can get their thing, you know, they'll know that they care, and I'll be able to have that information to then supply it. Mm-hmm. So
So Image has a number one program where for most cases, all their number ones are returnable.
Yeah.
They need to make a number two program. Yeah, to two, then TOO, because it's those number twos. So I'm just like, nope, kill it, you know?
Yep.
It's just like, no, if you guys made the number twos returnable, that's the safe, like, sweet spot.
That is, yeah. Because I had that with Killadelphia. I was like, I have confidence in this title. And so I ordered pretty high. And then I was like, oh, nobody cared. Oh, but it's returnable. That's nice, or whatever it was. And then number two came out, and I was like, trim the fat. And then everyone's like, that's a cool title. And I'm like, that's a good. I'm reordering right now.
Yeah.
Hopefully 2 weeks.
Yep.
It's just like,
because that's also where our own subjectivity can ruin it too, because I read Killadelphia and I was underwhelmed.
Yeah.
And so that's where I would support that killing as hard as you can.
Well, yeah.
But then other people do like, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
You can like thing.
I think what a lot of publishers do is they just kind of like load up a shotgun and shoot everything at the shelves, hoping that the next saga hits.
Yes.
Image trimmed their titles by about a third in 2019. They're planning on doing that again in 2020. And I guess hopefully the other publishers kind of follow suit and and trim the fat on their end first and give you only the lean muscle.
And then seven new publishers show up on the scene.
Exactly. Because there's a need, obviously.
Well, like you said, natural selection will take place at some point because all those burger books and...
Black Crown.
Black Crown. Black Crown's gone, you know.
Yeah.
Burger Books is kind of there, but we don't recognize it being there anymore. Yeah, they didn't announce it as dead, but they're not releasing much. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So, natural selection, survival of the fittest.
Thanks for joining our retailer podcast. Yes. We will see you on Discord.
Anyway, so let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And hey, welcome back to our foursome of Preacher Book Report. Preacher Special. It's been almost a year since we've done this. I kind of forgot about it.
Really?
It was in April of 2019. When last we saw Jesse Custer, Tulip, and Cassidy, it was the Dixie Fried story arc. I think that's the one that was in New Orleans or down New Orleans. And Jesse and Tulip were hopping into their pickup truck. They were about to leave Cassidy behind, but surprise, surprise, he decides to follow them. So the arc we're reading now is the War in the Sun story arc. The book that I have is, I think, the latest version of the Preacher that you can get book for. It's, they call it Into the Badlands for some reason, but this contains the War in the Sun, the one-shots, One Man's War, the story of You Know Who, and the Good Old Boys, which I actually kind of liked. we find Jesse and Tulip and Cassidy heading into, the Arizona desert?
Yeah.
Where they shot all the John Wayne films.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing that I took from this reading that I kind of forgot about is how good Garth Ennis is at... So I have a thing about comic creators who do too much telling and not showing. And he's great at showing, but he has these really interesting sequences where he barely even shows and tells you, and there's a multitude of story happening. And there's a sequence in the first... part of the chapter, The One Man's War, that's the flashback to Herr Starr. Mm-hmm. And there's a part where the Grail gives him the job of like, yeah, you got to make sure this one guy shows up dead in the insane asylum.
Yes.
And then it just immediately cuts to them going like, didn't expect you to blow up the insane asylum. And it's just like minimal storytelling, maximum effect.
Very impactful.
I found that happened a lot throughout that story because I would have to like read a couple things or like make sure pages weren't stuck together because there was such like a leap of a timeline. Like, okay, he's going there.
Yep. And like, it's one of those things like if you knew that was Chris Claremont telling this story, you get a mini series about the explosion of the insane asylum.
There'd be several volumes.
If you knew that was Brian Michael Bendis telling that story, you get one page, but it would be like a freaking thesis statement.
And your intelligence would still be insulted.
Yes. But this, you just get that one beautiful... Is there a word that Scott McCloud used where he talks about...
For the in-between the...
In-between the panels.
Yeah.
Interstitial.
An understanding comp.
Something like that.
Interstitial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just like that,
the message that's between the lines. Yeah, I don't think I'm using the right word, but...
I think that works, though.
Yeah.
But he's just such a magician when it comes to that. I don't think there's many creators that do it.
I love the one-man store... excuse me, I'm tired. One Man's War story of Herr Starr, because I'm still making the mistake of watching the AMC TV series, and it's such it's such a mangling of the graphic novels. And the fourth season, I posted on Facebook the other day. It's like, I don't know. If I'm not mistaken, I think the fourth season of AMC's Preacher is unwatchable because it's turned into this gory Dukes of Hazzard, which is not what the. And I'm like, okay, I got to go back and clean my palette because. Starr in particular in a TV series is painted to be such a buffoon and borders on slapstick. There's nothing threatening about him. He's just pathetic. Everybody's pathetic except for our protagonists. And the story where it opens with the terrorist holding the Pan Am flight in the UK and Herr Starr, the climax of that first arc of the story is that the numbers of losses were low, except for this little girl who Herr Starr carries out in his arms, who's had her head half blown away. And you're thinking, oh, this guy's going to be terribly sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And it toys with you because he's not. He's not cradling this girl in his arms because he feels some type of spiritual or soul bond with this other human being.
Or even just the loss of life, right?
No, like, he doesn't care. But that's not something you get from the TV series. Yeah. It's because the TV series is not written with that degree of pathos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
subtleties.
That's the thing that I really loved about this chapters that we read is how much the characterization is making every single character human.
A real person.
It's a real person. You know, they're dynamic. Yeah. They're not just this, I'm the villain.
Well, the relationship with Featherstone, where she's actually sad that he's such a horrible person, but like she does love him.
Yeah.
You know, or something.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm also such a big fan of the tangential one shot character stories, because there's the guy who the shuttle pilot, or the guy who got kicked out of the space program, and his whole because there's one message to that character, but he had to go and create this whole backstory and this whole thing about this guy just to get that message across in one issue. And I love that message,
and it really made the message impactful. This guy who, well, I guess I don't even know if we're doing plot synopsis or it's just read along with us. Yes. And you're just going to have to deal with it. But Jesse is thrown out of a plane pretty much.
During a nuclear fire holocaust. Yeah.
And he is found by this guy who wanted so badly as a child to be an astronaut and worked his way through like the Air Force and all this stuff. But he was denied. But because he had a desk job, he switched the paperwork around. Yeah. And so that he could get into the program, and then they kicked him out anyway.
Like on the first day.
Yeah, on the first day.
So and, oddly enough, they're going to figure it
and
out.
And it's all a story.
His incompetence was so obvious.
It's all a story to say why he was in the desert blowing up the ground so that it would say FU.
Yeah.
Large enough so that you could see it from space.
Yes.
Like this was his magnum opus or something.
Right.
And it was just this whole story just to tell why. And
the relief to get it out there, to get your anger at the world out there.
Everybody has those times where they're just so mad at the world. And
sometimes you need to say FU.
And sometimes you just need to say FU, and then you're done and it's good. And I feel good now. And it's just like,
I love this guy.
This guy, he's like, you might think I'm crazy, but come on now. And Jesse's like, well, thanks for telling me that. Mm-hmm. That was that. And yeah.
Yeah.
This run has one of the comic book pages. A year or two ago, we had a podcast. If you could own a piece of original artwork, what would be your grail piece? Mm-hmm. And this does have one for me. And it's the scene where they drop a nuke on the Saint of Killers and it pulls out of the fiery inferno. And he just spits and says, need more gun. It's like, I want that page so much. The whole fight with the tanks is one of my favorite moments in the comic. Where he's just massacring men in tanks with these, you know, his cults.
It's pretty much like a Godzilla moment, but bloodier, you know, where everyone just keeps going, pew, 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 and he's like, guys, it's not working.
Yep.
I do like the development of Airstar and Featherstone's relationship. Mm-hmm. There's one moment where she saves him from being shot.
Ah, yeah.
And he's like, give me a hand up and let's get out of here. You can bandage my wound in the flight out. And she's like, Airstar, I just shot a man dead. I've never done it before. I don't like it or how it makes me feel, but I did it in an order to save your life. So just for once, I would like some effing appreciation from you. She's shouting. Mm-hmm. And then he takes a moment and he says, thank you very much, Featherstone. Now help me up, and if we're lucky, we can get it safely away. And he just keeps on going. I really enjoyed those little moments.
Yeah. And facial expressions are always the tightest.
Yeah.
There's, I mentioned it off camera, but there's a sequence when they're showing people's reaction to Arseface's rock and roll band. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy with a billion piercings on his face. And then later on, Jesse Custer has a whole rant about piercings. But if you go read Garth Ennis's Punisher, he introduces the same character with the piercings, and he's named Spacker Dave. Every time Punisher would see him in the alley, Punisher would be, or in the apartment, he'd be like, Dave. And the guy would be like, Spacker Dave! And then he gets all his piercings ripped out of him in a horrible way. So like, Garth Ennis hates piercings and wants to torture people with them.
He just hates what he thinks is pretentious.
He hates what he thinks is pretentious. Yeah, and that goes all over the political board, because in Jesse's rant, it's about politically correct people, but you also see the sequence with the horrible racist guy. So you know, like, he hates everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, he's an equal opportunity.
Yes. An equal opportunity curmudgeon.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Right. And that's the beauty of his contribution.
There's so many unique politics happening that are, because our chapters were published in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
So he's reacting to things in 1996 through 7, 8.
Right.
And like all of Jesse's rants about the people coming on Ars Face because of the Kurt Cobain similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just kind of interesting.
The war on music.
Yeah, yeah, the flashbacks to 1998 happening.
Well, Ars Face is just such a brilliant meditation on... on stardom and, you know, what does that mean? And the cult of personality,
mm-hmm.
because everybody's in love with Ars Face, who they despised before. Now he's this, you know, everybody, all the girls want to sleep with him and all the guys want to be like him. And some people are emulating him by trying to shoot themselves in the face. And,
yeah.
You know, it's a satire that's so close to the bone. it's brilliant.
There is one thing that... kind of escaped me. The story of You Know Who, which is basically Arseface's backstory.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's, speaking of Kurt Cobain, he's a moody teenager. His dad's abusive. His mom's alcoholic and not present. And his friend is a Kurt Cobain loving character who...
Is also a sociopath.
He like shoots a dog for no reason.
Yeah.
And shoots himself because of Kurt Cobain's suicide, which leads to Arseface's attempted suicide. But Arseface, but I can't remember his real name, but
he's Arseface.
Arseface. But like he was this tortured character, and he did kind of want his dad's sort of like acknowledgement or approval. Exactly. And then when he becomes Arseface, that button gets pressed, that switch flips, and his characterization like completely changes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's no longer this brooding teenager. He's like this
positive.
Almost, yeah,
optimistic.
Super optimistic, like childlike character.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was reborn.
Indeed.
As Arseface.
Indeed. I mean, that's how I had to buy that, because I didn't see that, like, because Garth Ennis is so good at character arcs. I just didn't see that one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it happened, if we were to take it, because there's a part where the sister of the friend mm-hmm. is talking to him and mm-hmm. has the explosion.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's where you should read that he changes the personality or not around there. There's also the part where it's just like, he is just an idiot.
Mm-hmm. He is. He's like, the smartest.
There's the part where he's talking to the homeless man, and the guy's just like, why would you do that? You're dumb, son.
Yeah.
And then there's just like, maybe I am. You know?
he's like, I don't even know what arse means, but that's my name now. And it's just like, oh my God, what are you doing?
So in my edition, The Absolute Preachers, they have that artist who did that sequence. They show a lot of his sample work where he got other artists to pose for all the scenes. And the homeless guy was actually posed by Mike Rowingo, who passed away a little while back. But there's like this whole archive of pictures of Mike Rowingo as an angry drunk on a bench, and it's just like, this is kind of magical. There's all this little background stuff. So
yeah, I also want to talk about the other one shot, Good Old Boys, which I think is a little bit of a departure from the like Garth Ennis is so good at creating these characters, but then he just goes does a 180 and goes to this like super or stereotypical like
parody.
B-movie parodies. And there's even a panel where the guy's like, hey, don't mess with me, lady. I'm a cop on the edge. And she's like, you watch how you talk to me. Remember, I'm a supermodel turned lawyer with a dangerous secret. And you're like, really?
Yes.
I see. Okay, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah, but he clearly doesn't like that archetype too much.
Yeah. There's times where he writes for the artist he has, and that artist tends to do like the way crazy Judge Dredd stuff. That's Carlos Esguerra.
Esguerra,
who I think
yeah.
passed away a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
Steve Dillon's gone, so it's a book of ghosts right now, guys.
Yes.
But yeah, it's that face, that woman's face is so,
it's a face.
It's a face.
Yeah.
It's like a mug. It's like a, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can see that. I can totally see Judge Dredd in there.
You can tell in some of these projects where he's like, okay, I told all my serious character developments. Now it's time for Hairstar to wipe somebody's butt.
That's right. You know?
Or now it's time to have these guys do a weird thing with a gorilla.
Yeah.
And it's like he really has to break himself up because you can tell he's getting bored. And he's just like, ah, that was pretty serious. I wonder how many blue jokes I can put into issue now.
So... what are these one shots like? So he's got the story arc, you know, issues 34 through 40. Did Vertigo say, okay, well, you know, we want just one book. We're not going to have Steve draw it because he's too busy doing the other stuff. We want like three of these, you know, within the next year if you can. Or was Garth like, you know, I got these other stories I want to tell. They're tangential to the main storyline, but they're not really... in the thing I'm writing currently.
That's how I always viewed it. Plus, he has his stable of artists. Mm-hmm. And, like, everybody that popped up here are people he always works with.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of like, no, this is Steve's project, but I want you to tell this other weird story I got. You know?
And it's... And that happens when he's on a roll, because he did the same thing with The Boys. Mm-hmm. There's like the Herogasm miniseries. There's and the
Highland Huey.
Yep. And there's the Butcher miniseries. Like, yeah. I mean, when he's a terrific world builder, building his own worlds, and he gets really immersive with it. And there are times where I felt like, oh God, do I really need a Butcher miniseries? And then I got a couple of pages into it. And I'm like, yeah, I do. Do I really need this Herogasm story about superheroes getting together, having this orgy on an island? Is this really going to be worth my? Yeah, no, I'm going to need this.
And he doesn't want to interrupt the release schedule for the core title,
right?
Yeah,
and they don't impact it, but they enhance it.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Flashbacks. So all the Saint of Killers.
Has, the main issues that we're talking about, plus the Hairstar.
Well, and yours story. Is the one that Ben has is completely recolored.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I'm comparing
Nicer paper.
I'm comparing the volume that Cole has versus the volume that I have. And your pages are a little bit yellowed. I was just assuming that's the not because
paper.
Of age.
It's
that's
newspaper.
Just different paper.
Yeah,
different
paper or stock. Newsprint kind of. Yep.
So do they go through and recolor everything?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. I think my edition is also recolored. I think maybe my edition and your edition, Ben, are from the same recoloring.
That is a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's good work.
And that's why they charge you $100 for the absolute edition.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I also like there's some characters that just pop up briefly, but I will always remember this pilot. every time I go back, I'm like, oh, yes, this guy's time to shine. Because like he seems kind of throwaway, but then there's the part when the new kids and he like takes charge of this flight. And it's just like,
oh, yeah.
He's the one
right, yeah.
Flying the U.S. government plane.
Yeah, and he's just
that Jesse and Tulip have taken
Jesse and
over.
Tulip
and Cassidy.
He's the reason they survive, you know. But there's such an interesting character change with
because
him.
Because he knows what's going to happen when the EMP
The EMP is going to go off and he's like, this is what we have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minor character, never shows up again, but I will always remember him because Steve Dillon's artwork like gave him facial expressions that like took control of the scene.
Yeah.
It's like, this guy is why you survived.
Yeah.
You know? So
I also loved going back to the Hairstar stuff, which I think was my favorite, even though he's pretty much throughout this whole thing.
Yes.
was when he came up to that lieutenant, you know, and like, and he goes to this base and he's trying to do this thing to set up Jesse and all this stuff. And he goes up to the lieutenant and he's like, this is my thing. And he tries to do his own bravado or whatever. And the guy comes back at him like a bulldog.
Yeah.
And you see, it's just this, it's two panels, I think, that you see his reaction,
mm-hmm.
but they're so impactful. Like he could have even just been one panel. You see Hairstar actually shaken up by this guy coming at him being like, I see through your BS and I'm not going to deal with any of it. You know, we're going to do this thing, but we're not going to do it your way.
That was Steve Dillon's magic. I just love his facial expressions.
It was this, it really took me aback when I saw that. Cause I don't think I've seen Hairstar have a range of emotions, but I don't think I've ever seen him shaken like that, you know, in the previous volume. So it was such a good moment.
There's so many things with Hairstar, like the whole sequence where he's running into the desert and he's hopping on one leg.
Oh, and he keeps falling.
And it's broken up by the one bad word. And like everything that happens to him is a cavalcade of farce. But you still, like, it's not the farce that he sounds like he is in the show.
No, he's not a buffoon.
He's not a buffoon. Right. But all these buffoonish things happen to him.
Yes.
And it's an interesting balance.
Exactly.
That he maintains that menace, yes, even though all this, even though he had to wipe somebody's butt.
Yeah.
You know? Even though his head might look like a genitalia.
And then we get to the Hills Have Eyes,
yes,
chapter, yeah, where he's, you know, Hairstar wakes up in the mine with
the,
know,
cannibals.
With the cannibals, and they're connoisseurs, no less. They,
yeah,
they're, oh, very,
they're
well versed. Yes, what's, yeah, that?
They're foodies.
Yeah,
for
they're,
sure.
Yeah, they're cannibal foodies.
Yeah.
And you know, he's totally out of his element. He can't commit. He's terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually start to feel some sympathy for
him. It's another moment where you, yeah, see him like, I don't know if I'm going to get out of this.
Yeah. You want him to get out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want the cannibals to win.
No.
These guys are going to sexually assault me, then they're going to eat me. And you can see how terrified he is of it.
I love the whole sequence when he finds the magazine that's, yeah, cheese sodomites.
Yeah.
And then the girl's like, that's not ours. Yeah. That must have been the last guy.
What do you mean, last guy?
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is my, if you've followed along of all of our Preacher book reports, this is my first reading of it. Everybody else, this is like your second or third, or Chris, right, in your case,
17th. Well,
annual rereading of it.
Yes.
I've already read the next chapter, and I just bought the final one at the store tonight. I'm going to probably read that pretty soon. But we'll continue on with the next the next chapter, which is Salvation, issues 41 through 50, at some predetermined later date.
We need to do it sooner. I always get so jazzed up. I'm, yep, like, I want to reread everything.
We'll do it next time because I'm all caught up. So, yeah, nice. We'll plan for that in a couple weeks. That's Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Mom podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. Say everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Nicole Lamb. Lay it on us, Nicole.
I've been blessed with another gift from Mysterion.
Yay!
I didn't even use my crystal ball this time.
Oh, that's too bad.
I didn't have to. Mysterion has graced me with gifts. This week's quiz time is brought to you by the world's greatest comic magazine, The Fantastic Four. These questions will be about the villains and allies the Four have encountered over the decades. It's clobbering time! Let the quizzing begin! Number one, we all know the Mole Man was the first villain to menace the FF in their debut issue, but who did the FF fight in their second issue? If you don't know, I can do multiple choice.
I want to say El Diablo.
Nyr.
Okay.
It's not the Master Thinker.
Nyr.
The Mad
Thinker. A, Doctor Doom, B, Submariner, C, the Skrulls, or D, Miracle Man.
Skrulls.
Yes, the Skrulls, which is also their first appearance in the Marvel Universe, titled The Skrulls from Outer Space. The FF fight Miracle Man in their third issue, Submariner in their fourth, and Doctor Doom in the fifth. Number two, the FF. Number 10, Dr. Doom swaps minds with Reed Richards, taking over his body. A few years later, Doom swapped minds with a different hero and friend of the FF. Who was it? Was it A, Spider-Man, B, Daredevil, C, Captain America, or D, Hulk?
Daredevil?
Yes! I love your confidence in Daredevil number 37 by Stan Lee and Gene Colan. It worked fairly well, but Doom lost in the end, as always. Number 3! The Inhumans made their first appearance in the pages of the FF. What makes Karnak different from the other members of the Inhumans? Do you want multiple choice on that too?
Because he's short.
Is it A, he is an alien, B, he is a mutant, C, he is an Eternal, or D, he was never exposed to the Terrigen Mists? I love your confidence. D, Karnak was never exposed to the Terrigen Mist, right? Which gives the Inhumans their powers. Karnak came by his ability to find the weakness in anything through obsessive practice, strength, and his martial arts training.
Right.
Number 4. Who did the FF encounter in issue number 11 that could shapeshift into literally anything? He wasn't the Super Skrull, but was an alien from the planet Pop-Up.
Impossible Man.
The Impossible Man. He wasn't a villain, but an annoying prankster, much like Superman's Mitzelbitalik. Mm-hmm. He claimed to be a Paparian from the planet Pop-Up in the 10th Galaxy. The FF are able to stop his harassment by telling everyone to ignore him. Impossible Man decides to leave the Earth as he finds it boring. Number five. In the 2015 Secret Wars, in which Dr. Doom is a god, who are the police?
Thor Crew.
A variety of Thors from past and across the multiverse enforce the law of Dr. Doom with their hammers. And that is quiz time from Mysterion.
And thank you for the Christmas card, Mysterion.
Mysterion, give good card.
All righty. Well, thank you, Mysterion. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next week.